Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN. Let's waste no time, no monologue today in the interest of just getting this podcast up as soon as possible. Let's bring in our guest, Gil Alexander. We'll talk some college hoops, react to this weekend, look ahead to the Sweet 16, maybe talk some Major League Baseball. So without further ado, let's bring on Gilly. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast, skipping the monologue, skipping the open in the interest of getting this podcast up as soon as possible. And we will welcome in our guest. It is the great Gil Alexander, a numbers game beating the book. Gilly, what's going on? Thanks for coming on. I guess I'll start with this. Did Sunday save the weekend here? Did Sunday save the first 4 days of the tournament?
A little bit, yeah. First of all, thanks for having me. Yeah, I think a little bit. A little bit. Obviously, the big headline is going to be Iowa beating Florida. One of the number one seeds gets bounced. But if you look at it region by region, assuming Alabama holds on to a massive lead as we're recording this here at the end of the night, you will have one seed in each region that is not a top four seed, right? So you will have a number five, St. John's in the East. You'll have Iowa, which beat Florida in the South as a, I guess, what are they, 8 or 9? I can't remember if they were. They were nine. You obviously have Texas in the West as an 11. And in the Midwest, you end up with number 6, Tennessee. That's it. Other than that, it ended up being everybody who you thought it would be. So, I think it saved it a little bit. Iowa specifically saved it maybe kind of single-handedly. But what does that make? That makes next week's matchups so great.
Yeah, and the matchups next week are great, and the fewer upsets you get in the first 4 days, the better the matchups are going forward, at least on paper in theory. But if I was doing this show before these games on Sunday, my open would have been, you know what, the tournament is just not as much fun as it used to be, at least in the first 4 days. Cinderella is dead. And the term March Madness, is not all of the favorites winning and winning by 20 plus points.
That's right.
Madness means you get one or two Cinderellas. It's part of Americana. It's part of, hey, anything is possible. It's just, that's part of the charm of the tournament is buzzer beaters, close finishes, and upsets. And that's just, Sunday saved it a little bit. We got the St. John's buzzer beater. Iowa hits the three at the buzzer or close to the buzzer. But for the most part, man, this tournament has just become a little bit too predictable, hasn't it?
Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right. And I think we were saying this, at least, I think you were saying, I certainly was on a numbers game, which is, leading up to the tournament, this is going to be the tournament where if you're in your upset rewarded pools or in your survivor pool, there's probably going to be fewer upsets than ever before. And you're going to have to be so precise in targeting those to actually win your pools. And so after the first day, remember High Point won, and I guess, did Texas win on Thursday too? I can't remember. I know High Point did.
Texas did win on Thursday, yes.
Texas won Thursday. So remember, everybody was like, it's going to be a lot more upsets than you think, right? Like there was that kind of narrative Friday morning. And I was like, okay, everybody slow down. So one, let's at least let the first 2 days go by before we make this conclusion. And here we are now after the weekend, and it's everything you're saying is correct. And I do, if you're like, and I'll just speak for Survivor Pool. So I got one of my three entries through, but I basically have no chance of winning because the one entry that I got through, I've already used Texas. And so my ability to advance, you need these lower seeds. There's so few of them available anymore that you would just need some knockout flurry. You can't advance much beyond, say, picking Iowa. You're almost forced to pick, I guess is what I'm saying. Iowa, because they're a 9, Tennessee, because there's a 6, and even that might not be enough. Does that make sense? So it's like there's no opportunity because there's just not that many out there left.
So this is probably a niche conversation that's better saved for off the air, but what the hell, we'll have it on the air. The pool we're in, is it's not enough to win it, right? Because this is my first year doing it. It's not enough to just survive the whole way through. There's going to be multiple people that do that.
Yeah. Like, for instance, my buddy Tommy, I was bust on my buddy Tommy. He's my oldest, dearest friend, Tommy in DC. And last year he got to the end. And the whole time he was playing the game, the whole time I'm like, you realize you're not playing the correct game. You're playing some other game where you're just trying to get to the end. He goes, that's what I'm doing, Gilly. I'm trying to get to the end. I'm like, you have no chance of winning. So it's like, yeah, you kind of don't. I mean, I don't know what you, maybe you have a lot of points already. You could. But if you don't, then yeah, that's very, I guess that's what I was saying before the tournament started in upset minded brackets and in survivors. It's like it's part of your theme about how it's not quite as madnessy. And so your opportunity to even enjoy those betting vehicles, right? Upset minded pools and survivor pools almost ends prematurely if you haven't been completely precise the first 4 days.
Does anything feel differently in your mind in terms of who's going to be holding up the trophy at the end than it was maybe 4 days ago?
Well, that's a great question.
Thank you.
The Formula Five, right? The number one seeds and Houston. We've only lost Florida, so I think my answer is, I mean, Duke doesn't look great, right? If anything, you know, but I, you know, I had Arizona and Florida in the final. I still think it comes from that group. But now if the question were, okay, if not from that group, who is it? I still think it's, you know, UConn was always the first name that popped in my head. I still think they have it in them. But beyond them, who am I forgetting?
Houston, Iowa State.
Well, Houston is part of the five. Purdue is the one that I've heard thrown around. I just don't buy that. You know, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there is a possibility of them. So no, I still think it's, you know, four of those five are still alive. And I think it comes from Arizona, Duke, Michigan, or Houston.
Nice cover for Purdue today, by the way.
Oh, that's the other thing. We have a VSiN bracket challenge. I'm sure this doesn't only apply to me. I'm sure it applies to some of the other shows as well. We do show entries. There's at least five losses that are like, we lost all of those? How did we lose any of them? You know, and that's it. It's the ultimate Plinko. That was pretty bad. Obviously, Santa Clara is probably the worst of the worst, right? But yeah, Purdue and who was that again this morning? I already have, we watched so many basketball games. I can't remember who they played.
St. John's, I think you had.
Oh, no, St. John's. I'm saying the Purdue game. Who did they play again?
Oh, Miami.
Miami, right, Miami.
Although down Miami four had with no, like 56 seconds left.
Yeah.
They were down 11 with like 3 or 4 minutes left. So it's not like the worst beat of all. I've seen a lot of people saying, you know what, there's zero correlation between the spread and who wins. And this is just like such a bad beat. I mean, it was an unfortunate beat, but it wasn't. And I mean, I was part of it. It wasn't like the most ridiculous beat of all time. It was unfortunate, but, and I wish they wouldn't have fouled down 56 seconds, especially rushing, just jumping over each other, tackling each other to foul an 87% free throw shooter,
so
whatever he was.
Excited to foul him. Yeah.
Yeah. Wasn't necessary. Would have rather just blown some clock. And who knows? Maybe Purdue rushes up or, you know, takes a bad shot at the end of the shot clock, and then Miami can cover late. But it was a tough beat.
Yeah, sorry about that. My comment after that game was simply, you know, sometimes basketball can be really simple. Purdue just made shots and Miami couldn't make shots. Like, it was just that simple in the second half. They just rolled them. So, yeah.
Something that Steve Fezzik, who sometimes, I mean, you're probably not aware of this, has strong opinions and will, believe it or not, voice them on Twitter.
No.
With authority. He had an issue with how Kansas handled the final 10 seconds for people that didn't watch. Tie game, Kansas rallies back. Kansas has a million fouls to give, and they start giving them, and they start giving them right away. I actually think he's kind of right here, where, you know what, St. John's isn't going to shoot with 8 or 9 seconds left. Wait to give the fouls. What was your take on this whole ending of the game where St. John's eventually wins on a layup at the buzzer?
Yeah, so I guess they started that play with two team fouls, which, by the way, we can talk about officiating
too.
Incredible. Yeah, so they had, what, they had four to give, was it? Four to give?
Yes.
And so they used them back to back to back to back all the way down to like 6.7 seconds or something like that. And so I think Fezzik is directionally correct, right? Like, he's right that the final foul to give was probably used a little too early by, we're talking about a little too early. We're talking about a matter of 2 seconds, right? On the other hand, you know, and I've said this via text to him directly, so I'm not talking out of school here, as you were aware, as you were party to that text, I think the, like, absolute 1,000% certitude with which he says such things is overstated, because there always is the possibility, right? You know, of course, the result of it didn't work out in their favor. But if, in fact, they had waited a couple more seconds, let's say the ball had gone underneath or just they had advanced it three more steps or whatever, and then the guy does shoot a reasonable shot and gets hacked, then we're all saying the opposite thing. We're all like, oh, my God, how can you, right? How can you foul when the guy's going up? How could you give them an opportunity? So while I think he's correct, it probably was a little early. I'm just not as outraged as he is.
It was a fascinating situation. As much basketball as we've all watched, I can't remember an exact scenario. I'm sure it's happened, but I can't remember an exact scenario where it was like that, where one team had the final shot, but the other team had so many fouls to give within the last 10 seconds. It really was a bizarre kind of confluence of events, wasn't it?
It was a lot of fouls. Because, I mean, how many of these games have you watched where a team has only two fouls that deep in a game? Is that the only game of the
whole
tournament?
Almost never happens.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there's a lot of hosiery in some of the officiating. Like, I think, like, UCLA, you know, what was it? No, that UCLA had one play where they got hosed or shouldn't have been a three. But there was that, what was the one game we were watching? It was the Kansas game. Yeah. Where I did think Kansas got earlier. They got a couple calls in their favor. The lengthy guard, Melvin, what's his name?
Council.
I'm sorry. It's Council Jr. He like had to call the play for a ref. He's like, oh, it's over and back. It was off his name. And the ref's like, oh, okay. Called it, right? That gave a possession to Kansas that they probably wouldn't have gotten otherwise. And there was another play in that game as well, where it's like, what are we, like, completely in favor of Kansas, I thought also, now from escaping me. So there was a little bit of that. So I don't have, like, a tremendous amount of sympathy for Kansas in the result there. But I do think St. John's looks good. I think that spread next week is a little too high. I guess we should segue to those.
Sure.
You know, I think Duke, you feel, I'll take those points. Thank you very much. Duke does not look good at all, you know, and you were pointing out that you think, oh, I did want to say this about Kansas too. Darren Peterson, man, I don't know if I get it. I don't know if I get it. And he may prove to be the best NBA player, you know, on God's green earth when all is said and done. I'm going to say no. But like, I don't understand. He had to step up in that game and there was just none of that to me. From him.
So if you're a team, let's just say, like, you're a Wizards fan and you're on the clock, Peterson or DeBonza, you're going DeBonza?
I think so. And Todd would hate me for that.
Our Peterson or Acuff, you're going Peterson or Acuff?
Peterson, I don't know. The problem with the guards, like we were talking a little bit about this yesterday. I was with some folks, it's like, okay, because Jeff Parles called on the Megabody, said he thinks Darius Acuff Jr. is the best player in the draft or the best player in the whole tournament. The only issue with guards is when you draft a number one, like, unless you're Allen Iverson or John Wall or Derrick Rose, you know, you have to make sure that it's like a generational kind of player. Because for every Cade Cunningham, there's a Markelle Fultz or a Ben Simmons. So it's a tough guy to go first. So I don't know that I would. I'd probably go Peterson over Acuff.
Yeah, and it's interesting you brought up Fultz and Simmons because those are two guys that both, I think they were back-to-back drafts too, 16 and 17, where it's like, oh, they didn't make the tournament, but don't worry about it. They're going to be great. Once it matters, once they get to the NBA, it's all going to translate. It's all going to figure itself out. It's like, you know what? 64 teams, 68 teams make the tournament. If you're that good and you can't get to your tournament, your team to the tournament, I kind of have questions about it. So it's interesting you brought up those two guys.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I'm saying the first line that I saw was the St. John's one, and I'm just like, that seems like way too many points. I'll take the Johnnies at this point. That defense, that lockdown defense, Duke can show up and beat that and score like against that defense to cover that, tip of the cap.
Yep, I want to get to these lines here in a second, but before we get to that, you have interest, I've heard, in hiring Steve Lapis as your director of analytics if you ever run a basketball team. Is that true?
He had a really bad last minute of the game he was calling today. They all run into each other now. Was that the Virginia game that he was calling?
Virginia-Tennessee, yes.
Yeah, Virginia-Tennessee, where I think in the last minute he did not one, not two, but like three, he had three ridiculous statements. I think the first of which was, like, with like 50-some seconds left, it had something, I have the exact quote, I wrote it down for the show tomorrow, but it had something to do with, all right, take as much time as you need for this shot. You know, it was like that kind of comment the first time. The second one, I can't remember which was second or third, but one of the other ones was, all right. Oh no, the second one was they were down six and they fouled. Tennessee fouled. And like Rick Barnes was just beside himself. And Lapis was like, oh my God, that's the worst. Wait, no, it's not the worst thing. It's one of two really bad things. There's that. Like, first of all, you give up a three, that's bad. But a foul, that's the worst thing. And really fouling there is like not at all a calamity. And then the coup de grace was the third one where he goes, I think they were down six at the time or five. Yeah, I think they were down five maybe. And he's like, all right, you don't need a three here. You can get a two, and it's not the end of the world because you need two scores. So in my head, I'm like, well, you're right. It's not the end of the world, but it is the end of the game if you do that, probably, right? So it was just, that was not his best minute of basketball commentating. It took him, by the way, I thought the announcing all weekend was pretty good, though. Like, I was like, oh, my God, I don't really have any bad announcer things.
You could fit Steve Lapis right into an NFL telecast and he would be, take the points, kick the field goal. Steve, you're down 20 points in the fourth quarter. Yeah, take the points, kick the field goal. He fits right into that. He loves not needing a three.
You liking Nate Burleson?
I'm not. I don't know why they're doing that. I think that whole halftime setup, which I didn't watch too much of, but I know people crushed it, I guess. Who's the girl on it? Is it Renee Montgomery that kept calling Michigan State Michigan? And eventually Barkley goes, hey, you know what? They're going to get mad at you. That's not Michigan State. That's Michigan. He corrected her, which not a lot of people could. That's that halftime show. It's not Greg Gumbel and company. That show could use some work, I would say.
She's also mentioned, I don't know if you caught this. I don't know if you know this, Will. She was a point guard.
Yes, she was. She was.
She was a point guard. So,
what are your thoughts on that?
Or she was a shooter. I don't know what she was. She was someone else. I'm sorry. Go ahead. What was it?
What are your thoughts on that whole halftime panel thing?
I thought Burleson was trying a little hard. I don't know if it was like a trying to be cool kind of thing or whatever. CBS, this is just Nate Burleson multimedia career, whether it's CBS morning show, Monday through Friday, whether it's the NFL preview show, now this. They have deemed Nate Burleson the greatest star on earth. And I don't, you know, I'm sure he's a lovely guy and I'm sure he's fine. He's very competent at what he does. I felt like it wasn't that great. I thought Clark Kellogg saved him a bunch of times. I kind of like Clark Kellogg as sort of like the steadying ship of that show.
Yeah, and he's just a familiar face. I mean, we've been watching these shows since I can remember him. But I'm sure if you rewind back to 1998, Clark Kellogg is sitting in that same chair, giving the same analysis, looks the same too as he did 30 years ago. And there's just sort of a comfort in these guys that, you know, we've been around forever.
Yeah.
The Sweet 16, we'll just go game by game here. I'll just throw them all at you and you can kind of give me a thought. Purdue laying 7.5 to Texas, about right?
My first thought is Texas plus the points, but I can see Purdue doing exactly what they did today.
It is Black Friday, and we are watching Iowa, Nebraska in college football. No, wait, what's this? It is college hoops with a chance to go to the Elite Eight. Nebraska laying 2.5 to Iowa. I can't even believe it. Total 134.5. Boy, that 134.5 seems a bit high. Give me any sort of points in an Iowa game.
Yeah, give me Iowa. Give me Iowa.
Yeah, I'm with you.
You
don't play a lot of totals, I don't think, before the game, but I don't know, 134.5, is that a touch high? Isn't this going to be, I don't know, winner probably gets to 60 or something like that?
Brutal. Yeah. God, I got this total in this Bama game wrong. I thought this was going to soar over. I didn't know Texas Tech was going to decide not to score tonight.
Yeah, you need both teams to participate there.
Yeah, that seems like a rock fight. So yeah, high-ish.
Houston, for whatever reason, is granted a home game. They're laying 2.5 here against Illinois. Total 139.5. I love this Illinois offense, but playing on the road, that's a tough scenario, tough assignment there for Illinois.
Yeah, it is. But what a game that could be. I want no part of that line.
Duke, as you mentioned, laying 6.5/7, depending on where you shop. Total 142.5.
Too much.
Give me Pitino and all those points, right?
Yeah, man. Give me that. Give me those points. Like I think you were saying in the text, right? You even think that they have the personnel to stop Boozer with Mitchell, right?
I think the kid Mitchell can do a good job, a reasonable job of defending him one-on-one, and that kind of makes everybody else not as effective and not leaving these guys wide open. And saying what Boozer can have a good game, but probably not a great game. And then you just turn it into a rock fight and you can hopefully steal it at the end. And, you know, give me Pitino versus Shire in a tight game. Shire's had these upset losses. He got upset.
Yeah.
You know, a number of times here. It was a bad loss last year against Houston, a couple years ago against NC State. I'll take Pitino and all those points.
I'm with you. I'm there.
I don't have anything yet. Michigan State. Oh, we just popped it up. UConn laying a point here to Michigan State. About right to you. It's hard to go against Hurley. Hurley versus Izzo is a hell of a battle. Do you have any feel for this one?
That's a hell of a game too, man. Yeah.
Great game.
UConn lightly, I feel like, you know? But it's Izzo.
And then Iowa State is leaning 4 to Tennessee.
I think, do you trust Rick Barnes? I don't know,
really.
I still think I take the points. I still think I take the points with Tennessee. I could be wrong about that one.
If you had to bet one of those games, what would you bet?
Of all those? St. John's.
Yeah.
Easy.
I'm with you.
St. John's, quick answer.
Yeah.
I think what we've seen from Duke is just awful so far, really. I mean, not awful, but just like, I just don't feel like, that's the thing also, but could they turn it on and then show themselves to be, you know, the biggest championship contender come this weekend? Of course they can. They can turn it on in a heartbeat. But I just think the makeup of St. John's, they seem like they're a very tough team to blow off the court at this point. So,
which is amazing because UConn beat them by 32 like less than a month ago, which just, it's hard. I mean, I know it's only one game, but it's hard to believe. If you could only get one of these.
That was the rematch of that.
That was the rematch. That was like the triple revenge. St. John swept them last year, beat them the first time, and then UConn was just out for blood. You would, sounds like you'd probably sprinkle some money line too, right, at St. John's?
Yeah, probably a little bit. Probably a little bit.
Who's holding up the trophy in a couple weeks?
God. I think that I would have said Florida. I am going with Arizona, baby. This is the year.
Yeah, that was my team before the year. Yeah. Arizona.
I say
all
that.
Right.
I'm already laughing at myself for saying it.
No, it's not crazy. I mean, they check a lot of boxes. Gilly, I appreciate it. One last one. Major League Baseball season, multiple choice question, starts in 2 days, 2 weeks, or 2 months? What is the correct answer?
The correct answer is, I can actually answer this. None of the above. It starts in, what's the date today?
I think it starts on Wednesday.
Starts on Wednesday.
I think Wednesday night, Giants Yankees, me versus you.
Yeah, me versus you. Yeah, it's the 22nd
way too
day,
early.
Right?
It feels way too early.
That's a standalone that night, and then it starts for real the next day.
Wednesday night on Netflix, and then Thursday everybody plays.
Sweet 16. Are you ready for baseball?
Not really. I mean, I love it. It's the best. I love every day of it. I'll be betting it every day, multiple bets. But
here's the thing: Can we
wait till April 1st?
Yeah, I was gonna say, as the Major League Baseball season. I'm not talking about those like random Japan games, right? Has the Major League Baseball full slate ever started before the Sweet 16 games? That's got to be a first.
I know the last couple of years they've started the exact same day, which why they go head-to-head, I have no idea. But this is a little early. I mean, they do a lot of strange things, but going head-to-head with the Sweet 16 is pretty, pretty crazy. What's your favorite baseball bet?
Guardians under.
Yeah.
Guardians
and
under.
You're big on Texas, right? To Texas over.
Texas over. I like Logan Webb most wins, 16-1
okay.
Now. I just have a feeling this is finally, he gets no run support ever. One of these years, he's got to get it.
And I think
this
is
the fun
it.
Thing about these awards bets with baseball, man, you got action every day pretty much.
Yeah.
These, they just carry you through the spring, through the summer, back until football. You bet these, you have these things in, going through football season where you almost forget about them once football ends. It's just, or once football starts, it's just, it's the best because it just carries you for so long.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we were just talking before we came on here, like, wow, there's only, you know, there's only 15 more college basketball games after next week. There's only three, right? Like, that's it. And it's already like, oh man, what a season following Todd's bets and that kind of thing. But it goes right into baseball. The Masters is there. And then after the Masters, it kind of, well, then there's the draft, right? So it just kind of never ends. And then it sort of ends with that, I think, into the summer with baseball taking the primary role and then just like golf and tennis majors when they happen.
Gilly, you're the best, man. Appreciate it. Let everyone know where they can find you.
Numbers game. Was that 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific on VSiN, and then the Beating the Book podcast, which thanks for doing the Megapod, the NCAA March Madness one. We always have a great time doing that this past week.
Always fun. Gilly, appreciate you coming on. Thanks.
Thank you, brother.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Appreciate Gil Alexander joining us. We will be back Wednesday. And by the time we get to Wednesday, we will be at opening day somehow of Major League Baseball. It's amazing. The baseball season has started, but we are here on to the Sweet 16. Baseball season, warmer weather. So we are through the winter malaise here and on to brighter, warmer days. So rate, review, subscribe. See you guys Wednesday.